I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with a Deal, and today our guest is Scott Freeling, the vice chair of the government contracts practice at Covington & Burling. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation. It's really great to be here.
We're going to talk about your career arc on today's podcast, how you got into the government contracts practice, the aspect of your practice that deals with M&A and private equity, and how you explain a fairly technical, nuanced practice to private equity professionals and M&A lawyers who are focused on completing transactions. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the practice.
Sure. I'm a partner here at the Washington, D.C. office of Covington. I've been at the firm for over 17 years, and we're one of the largest government contracts practices in the country. We have over 45 lawyers that are focused on representing companies that sell products and services to the government. Personally, I split my practice between helping companies do business with the government customers at the federal and state and local level, and also assisting buyers and sellers with the regulatory aspects of M&A transactions involving government contractors. Going way back in time, I grew up in South Florida. I decided to move away for college. I went to college at Washington University in St. Louis, then went straight through to law school, had the good fortune of being able to go to the University of Pennsylvania Law School. And I had always known that I wanted to end up in Washington, D.C. I'd been curious about how government works and figured there was no better place to be coming out of law school than Washington, D.C. And so I set my sights on D.C. I spent my 1L and 2L summers in Washington. The 2L summer, I was at Covington & Burling as a summer associate, and I had decided to select Covington not just for its reputation, but for its breadth of practice offerings. Because one thing I knew coming out of law school was that I didn't know what I wanted to do with my law degree. And I figured that if I can go to a broad-based practice with a rich and deep reputation in the DC market, that I'd have the time and space to figure out what I wanted to do.
And so talk about your clerkship, which was a little bit unusual, but helped orient you toward the practice you have today.
Sure. So I did a clerkship for 1 year at the U.S. Court of Federal Claims with Judge Susan Braden. I was drawn to the opportunity primarily because it was in the city I wanted to be in. But once I got to know the court, the judge, and the types of cases, I figured it really did fit with my interest at the time. The docket at the U.S. Court of Federal Claims is all claims against the government, or at least certain types of claims against the federal government. About half of the docket is made up of contract-based claims. And that's frankly where I first learned what a government contract was. It wasn't in college or law school. It was after studying for 7 years and applying that knowledge to clerkship, did I even realize that there's this world of government contracting out there.
And so then talk about your transition to being a young associate at Covington and how you started in the government contracts practice there and what you do as a younger government contracts lawyer.
So my clerkship left me sufficiently intrigued about government contracts, and I returned to Covington in 2006 as a very junior associate. I knew I wanted to at least try being a government contracts lawyer in private practice, so I split my time between that and our general litigation and investigations practice. Over time, I gravitated my focus towards government contracting, and I think it's helpful because it wasn't intuitive to me to just spend a few minutes to talk about what government contracting is. The U.S. government is the single largest purchaser in the world. It's reliant on companies to sell a range of products and services that support the government's mission.
And that's a huge range. I mean, almost anything you can think of that the government buys, and the government is the largest customer for many of the largest companies in the world.
That's right. So when you think of government contracting, don't think just of the Lockheed Martins and Northrop Grummans of the world that sell important products and services to support our national defense. You know, think about companies in virtually every sector of the economy, whether it's energy, consumer products, construction, technology, that most of those businesses in those sectors support the government either directly as a prime contractor or indirectly as a subcontractor to another company that has a prime contract with the U.S. government. All of those folks are considered government contractors, and they're subject to a pretty specialized set of rules and regulation that have developed over the years that are not necessarily intuitive and can present pretty stark contrasts between commercial contracting and government contracting.
So talk about that body of rules and regulations, how it might differ from another regulatory practice, and how it makes government contracting different from contracting between two private parties.
Good question. Let me do this by way of a few examples. So in the commercial context, two parties get together and decide they want to form a commercial contract. And there aren't necessarily competitive bidding procedures, and there certainly aren't the ability for an unsuccessful counterparty to go ahead and legally challenge the decision to award a contract to another party. In government contracting, that's pretty commonplace. The ability to file a post-award challenge to the award of a government contract. And that's something that you just don't see in commercial contracting. Another example is the government will, as a matter of course, reserve the right to terminate a contract at any time. So the government always has a walkaway right. You don't typically see that in commercial contracting. A third example would be the government's ability to audit or review books and records of a contractor. The government can conduct, in many cases, a post-award or post-performance audit of a contractor, and it's not uncommon for there to be demands to give back a portion of the revenue that you've generated under a contract that's long been performed.
So talk about, as an associate, how long it takes to get comfortable with what I'm assuming is a pretty large and involved set of rules and regulations, and then how you came to have M&A and private equity as part of your practice, even as an associate.
Yeah, so I would say it's a lifelong challenge to keep up with the procurement regulation, in part because it's constantly changing. The government will, from time to time, enact new or different regulations that affect a company's ability and method of delivering products or services to a government customer. Now, as a junior associate, I spent my time immersing myself in the practice, whether it was regulatory compliance counseling, litigation, bid protests, audits, investigations. I basically tried to do whatever came in the door. Although what I found is that I was gravitating towards the transactional matters, the opportunities to work with my colleagues in our M&A practice and other colleagues to help get deals done, to leverage the expertise that I've been developing in the regulatory work and apply that in the transactional environment. What that looks like in practice is helping with due diligence, helping with negotiation of transaction documents that may have regulatory implications, working through post-closing integration, working through a host of issues that may arise in the transactional environment, and using the specialized knowledge and expertise that I've been able to develop. There were a few key transactions as an associate that kind of whet my appetite for this type of work. As a very junior associate, I was able to assist my M&A colleagues with the sale of Goodyear's Engineered Products Division that ultimately was acquired by the Carlyle Group. I didn't have a huge role in that transaction. I basically helped Goodyear and our team develop responses to some due diligence questions about the government contracting portion of that Engineered Products Division business. But what it showed me is there was a role for specialized knowledge and expertise. And that definitely whet my appetite and gave me the impetus to look at other opportunities that I can get involved in transactions. Fast forward a couple of years, I had really a great opportunity to work as junior associate on two private equity roll-ups in the government contracts industry. The first dealt with a roll-up of a series of IT services businesses that were later built into Essentia, which is a business that our private equity client sold to Maximus in 2015. And in those deals, I had the ability to work very closely with the CEO and leadership team of Essentia. They gave me a tremendous amount of responsibility. I was the loan government contracts associate managing a host of regulatory issues in connection with their M&A pursuits and daily operations. It was frankly a bit unnerving to have so much responsibility as a mid-level associate, but it was also, looking back on it, quite a rewarding experience. In the other private equity roll-up, I had the good fortune of working with Lindsay Goldberg on their acquisition of PAE from Lockheed Martin in 2011, and then in a series of add-on acquisitions that really transformed PAE into a robust government services contractor that Lindsay Goldberg sold to Platinum Equity in 2016. We tackled a range of regulatory issues during those deals, and I had the true pleasure of working alongside a talented team of M&A lawyers at Cravath as co-counsel to help Lindsay Goldberg and PAE in their transactional pursuits. You know, these experiences made me realize that there was a true need in the market for transactions-minded regulatory lawyers who were able to take their regulatory expertise and get deals done.
How does your M&A and PE work differ from the government contracts work you still do? Are the teams larger? Is there more interaction with different kinds of people?
I think we're unique in that we can handle both types of work, whether it's the day-to-day counseling and support of government contractors and the M&A transactional support. When I'm working on a transactional matter, what we're doing is we're building a team of regulatory experts for the particulars of that deal. And so we really have to size up where the greatest risk areas of an acquisition target are and then find the right team members to bring together. In a matter where we're just providing support to a government contractor, there the teams are often smaller and are really focused primarily on supporting the company and helping with a discrete issue that they're coming to us with.
Talk about the differences in counseling corporations and private equity sponsors, and then also the challenges in working with co-counseled another law firm or with private equity professionals at a sponsor.
How we communicate with private equity and other transaction parties, I will say that's a great part of the job. The ability and the challenge to distill down complex areas of the acquisition regulation, apply that in the transactional environment, and do it efficiently and then a fast-paced and dynamic environment. It's a constant challenge for me and my team. We know that the need for clear, concise, and definitive guidance is so important in the M&A space. And I think that's just a challenge of the job and one that, frankly, I really enjoy. The question of partnering with my colleagues at other firms, I have a vibrant practice that allows me to work on some really exciting transactions with colleagues across Covington's M&A platform and worked on some really complex and exciting transactions over the years and really leveraging our regulatory and M&A strengths together. In the same vein, having practiced in this area for almost two decades and being at a firm with such rich regulatory offerings, whether it's government contracts, trade control, CFIUS, national security, we have a pretty strong network of lawyers at other law firms that look to us to augment their due diligence teams and support the transactions that they're handling for their clients. In those deals, we form teams to come together and work closely with our M&A colleagues at other firms. I'd say the challenge, no different than working with our M&A colleagues, is to think about how we can best plug into the transaction, where we need to understand the aspects of the deal that are most important to our client and to the M&A team and make sure that we're being as supportive and facilitative as possible to our M&A colleagues.
Talk about the growth of the government contracts practice at Covington in your time there.
Sure. So I joined in 2006, and at the time we were quite small. We had five practitioners that were working on procurement matters for our government contracts clients. I think the firm recognized correctly that we could do more in this industry, particularly given our rich client base and the fact that we had some rather large and significant relationships with companies that sold products and services to the government, but they weren't turning to us for our procurement expertise. Fast forward over the next 10 to 15 years, we've made a concerted effort to really beef up our scale and capability in this area. We now have 45 lawyers that are focused full-time on supporting companies and dealings with government customers. That has allowed us to really develop great expertise and specialization in different aspects of the practice. I'm really proud of the fact that we have developed a segment of our practice that's focused on supporting transactions and working with colleagues and lawyers across many different firms to provide that regulatory expertise that's needed to size up the risk presented in a transaction and to help get a deal done. That growth of our practice has enabled us to do that. We've made investments in learning the art of M&A and really being conversant in how private equity and deal lawyers think so that we can apply our regulatory expertise and really understand the environment that we're working in. I'm really proud of that and our ability to keep pace with transactions and work on really complex ones. It used to be the case that if we handled one or two deals a year, we were satisfied. These days, if we don't have two to three active deals going on at one time, I consider it a slow period, and we haven't had many of those in recent memory.
Talk about, just at a general level, the various aspects of the government contracts practice. You touched on M&A and PE. Could you give us an overview of broadly the kinds of issues that your lawyers would advise on?
Sure. So we get involved in a range of issues. I'd consider government contracts more of an industry practice than a practice focused on one type of activity. It's not just litigation. We spend a fair amount of time working in government investigations, government audits, front-end regulatory compliance counseling, helping our clients navigate that maze of laws and regulations that they're subject to by virtue of the fact that they count the government as a customer. So we look at our work as more of a supporting the client base and the industry in which they operate and not just a singular type of work.
And then how do you make sure your associates get the breadth of experience they need to be able to counsel effectively? You know, because I would assume as they go on in their careers, most of them will pick a more focused piece of the practice to specialize in. Do you, like many corporate firms, have a rotation? Do you have some lawyers such as yourself who try and keep a couple of practices going even as partners?
It's a good question. And we don't have a formal rotation system within the government contracts practice, but we have a uniform view that it's important for each of our associates to get that broad-based exposure to the practice. In large measure, because our clients come to us with a very wide range of issues. And it's important for each of our lawyers to, at a minimum, be able to issue spot across the practice. I think that's particularly true in the transactional work that I lead. When we come in to help with due diligence of an acquisition target in the government contracts industry, we can be confronted with a wide range of issues. And it's important for us to be able to identify those issues, explain them to the client, and help size up the risk associated with them. A couple examples. So if an acquisition target is currently a small business, and after the acquisition, it's expected that they'll no longer be a small business, we'll want to understand the implications of that and be able to educate our client on the consequences of that so they can factor it into their model and in their analysis of whether this deal makes sense. The same goes with an acquisition target that may be subject to frequent audit scrutiny or a requirement to provide cost or pricing data to their customer. We'll want to be able to bring the right subject matter experts into the transaction. But in order for us to do that, our attorneys at all levels need to be able to issue spot appropriately across the wide range of practice that we work in.
And talk about a deal or two in the last couple of years that has been really rewarding for you to work on.
So we have the good fortune of being able to work on deals that are quite large and pressworthy. And then we have the good fortune of being able to work on much smaller deals. And I enjoy that diversity of practice. We've seen just in recent times on the larger deal front, Advent's take private acquisition of Maxar Technologies for $6.4 billion. Peraton's take private acquisition of Perspective for $7.1 billion. Each of those deals presented complexity of their own and allowed us to really exercise our wide-ranging regulatory expertise to help get each of those deals done. But on the smaller side, we've worked on some really formative transactions. Veritas Capital's acquisition of Epic Design Solutions, and subsequent to that initial investment, some add-on acquisitions that have really helped grow that business. Most recently, the acquisition of G3 Technologies' cyber radio division. I can confidently say that in the range of transactions that we work on, no one deal is the same. Each one presents unique challenges and opportunities. And frankly, that's why I love this practice. It gives us the ability to really think hard about where the risk might lie in a particular target's operations, configure a team that makes sense for the particulars of that deal, and then help educate the client.
And then finally, how do you decompress from work?
Good question. We're in a client service business, and there's always the need for availability and the ability to meet our clients' needs. That said, I'm blessed to have a wonderful wife and three young children. Two are in middle school, one is in elementary school. And although it's not necessarily time just for me, I spend a lot of my weekends on soccer field, the baseball field, the track, cheering on my kids. And I really enjoy that. You know, just the opportunity to step away from the computer and spend time with the family. It's critical to my own professional success and so my personal well-being.
Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
For Drinks with the Deal, I'm David Marcus.